Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, usually focused on Kenpo, but we cover all the arts around here and got another wonderful guest here. And we will get into her story here. Carly, I'm just not even going to go through and butcher your... So we'll just go with Carly, and I'll put your full name in the notes. I always get nervous with people's names when we do this, but Carly is a fellow Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioner. We both train at the same school, Henzo Gracie DFW. And I'm excited to have her on because she's got a great story, and she is absolute amazing person in the jiu-jitsu competition realm. And as we're recording, got a competition coming up that I'm sure you're going to destroy all the poor souls that decide that they want to try and compete against you. So
I'm going to try.
So excited for that, but before we get into your story, I usually start things off with just kind of a brief background of my history. I've been in the martial arts officially since I guess the early 90s, at this point I am currently training 5 different martial arts: American Kenpo, Capoeira, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, and Hapkido. And I've also done some boxing in my days. So I stay pretty busy. So we may get into more of my stuff, but we are here for you. So yes, tell us, how did the martial arts find you? When did you get started? And we'll just kind of go from there.
Sure. So back in, gosh, it would have been, let's just say early 2010s, around there somewhere, when we moved to Florida. So prior to that, my husband was in med school and residency, and that didn't leave a lot of time for me to do anything extra. You know, I was working a lot because I was supporting both of us. So once he got everything done and out of the way, then I could kind of get into something, and I definitely wanted to do something competitive. I actually started because when we moved to Florida, I was working from home. And so my husband suggested, and he knew I wanted to get into something, but he suggested, like, hey, as a stepping stone, why don't you go check out title boxing? And I was like, oh, well, I don't know. It's like a group fitness class. It's not really my thing. I don't want to be in like a Taibo situation. I'm not interested in that at all. And he's like, no, I know somebody, just go check it out. If you don't like it, you don't like it. So I went to do that, and it actually was awesome because they didn't do all the franchise stuff. It wasn't an aerobics class. We were actually learning how to punch, learning how to kick. And it was a cardio class, but we were legit doing moves. So, and I did get like 4 private sessions to be in the actual ring, learning things how to actually fight. So I was really into that. I got good enough where they asked me to teach after a while. So I do have a background in personal training and social work. So I've been teaching people how to do things for a long time. So that was kind of a nice little natural segue into a whole new career for me. So I got really involved at that gym. And then I had a very minor surgery on my shoulder. I had to take some time off. And when I came back, title boxing had come in and said, you have to use our music, you have to do our program, you have to do all the things. And it wasn't the same club anymore. We were having to do, it was more of a cardio kickboxing class. And I just, ownership had changed, management had changed. They weren't my people anymore. So I kind of just moved on, and I was really looking for a Muay Thai gym because that's what I had been doing. And I did have this crazy idea in my 30s that, hey, maybe I'll do some MMA. I don't know why I thought that was a great idea, but, you know, whatever. So it's like, I really like the kickboxing. I like the striking. Let's find actual Muay Thai. Well, when I was there, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Southwest Florida, but it's a lot of old white people with a lot of money go there to retire, especially where we were in Naples. So at that time, there were only maybe two gyms. Maybe there were more, and I just didn't know how to look for them. But at least the Muay Thai part, there was only two. There was Fight Sports, and there was a place called Third Law, which was a privately kind of a single entity, but under Lloyd Irvin. He's not really as big of a name anymore, but he was then. So Fight Sports had just had a sexual assault allegation. So I was like, maybe I won't go there. That seems like a bad idea. So I went to this other place. I liked their kickboxing program. And for one price, you got everything. So I was like, well, I might as well try this jiu-jitsu thing since I'm paying for it anyway. And Muay Thai was only, I think, two nights a week. And it was only at night. There was nothing at noon. So I was like, you know, maybe I'll, let me just try it. So I tried it. Luckily, we had a decent group of girls. At that time, the professor's wife was a purple belt. There was a girl there who was a blue belt. And then there was a few different white belt girls. So it was a nice little group to get started with. They did a really nice little intro, show up 10 minutes before class. We'll at least show you how to put your gi on. We'll show you, like, hey, this is the back. This is closed guard. Like a real quick synopsis. So you weren't totally lost when you got into the class. And it just seemed like it was going to be a good thing. So I was like, well, let me just try it out. Of course, just like everybody else, you feel really stupid. You don't know. I've never moved with another person. Like, I was a swimmer growing up. I did soccer. I grew up in a time where girls did not do contact sports. So moving with another human being, I'm not super coordinated. I know you guys probably don't believe that now, but I will still trip over my own feet. Yes, I know jiu-jitsu, but trust me, I fall on my face all the time. It's okay. So you just feel very awkward until you learn how to move with another person. So I got into it, and what I found was in the Muay Thai class, we were having to hold pads for each other, and not everybody knows how to do that. And so with my body and my shoulder, it just kind of wasn't working out as much as I would have liked it to. It was really hard on my body in ways where it probably shouldn't have been had I had the right people around. Whereas jiu-jitsu, I could go at lunch and I could come back at night. There were some things that I couldn't do, but for the most part, I could kind of manipulate my way through things. Long story short, I have a shoulder injury that I got from birth. I've had it literally my entire life from the minute I was born. It limits my range of motion. I have permanent nerve damage, so there's some pain issues that I have to deal with. I have had to manipulate every sport that I've ever done, but that's hard because you can't always do that. I mean, for instance, when I learned how to swim, I used to actually propel myself down into the water instead of being able to stay on top because my arm is not shaped and doesn't move the right way. Whereas in jiu-jitsu, I can say, okay, well, this move doesn't exactly work perfectly, but I can tweak it so it does. which is, I think, the beauty of jiu-jitsu. So I got into it, and then I'm like, you know, I think this is good. This school goes and competes. I want something I can compete in. I really was kind of wanting to get that part of competitive sports back into my life after being out of something like that for so long. So, like a typical crazy Carly idea, I decided after 3 months of training I was going to compete at an IBJJF, which is one and done. If you don't know, it's single elimination. So I went in. I actually held my own. I didn't get destroyed. I definitely got beat, but there were little things that I had to fix. It wasn't like I was so dominated that it crushed my soul and I couldn't come back. It was small little pieces of the puzzle that I had to solve and could come back and do it again. And I always kind of, from that time that I lost, and I got my pity medal because there was only so many people in my bracket. And so I got third place by default. And I really decided that I don't like that. I don't like getting a medal because I lost. And I have every medal I've ever had. And I know, hey, at that one, I passed her guard, but she got me in half guard before I could get my points. And I used my hand to push her leg down and she took my back. And I made just that one mistake and it cost me the match. And I've never lost the same way twice after that. I was like, I'm not going to make these little mistakes. And if I do make these little mistakes, I'm going to fix them. But that being said, I lost a lot before I won. And at that school, was it the best mentally and socially for me after a while? No. Like I said, there wasn't a lot of options. The professor was a Cuban guy and he made us call him master. For the adult belts, instead of getting a stripe on your white belt, he gave us colored belts like children. So I have a gray belt, I have a green belt, I have an orange belt, I have a yellow belt. And I didn't know anything different. I was like, oh, cool, I got another belt. I didn't know anything different till I went to a competition and realized, like, oh, those are kids' belts. Like, that's weird that you do that to us. That's kind of demeaning if you think about it.
That is,
so
yeah.
It was very strange. And the whole, like, you have to call me master, it was just weird. But I had made a commitment. I wanted to compete. I was starting to get better. Again, I lost a lot before I won. But once I started winning, I did really well. So I was like, you know, I know once I win IBJJF twice, I get my blue belt. Because that was kind of his track for competitors is, if you're going to go compete, you have to win gold at an IBJJF at least twice. So I was like, that's all I got to do. Just eye on the prize. Let me do this. I was starting to kind of be the only girl in class because I would go to noon and all the girls would come at night. So, you know, there was that whole thing. But it wasn't a big deal at that point. At that point, I was in it. I was committed. The boys, training with the boys didn't bother me all that much. So did that, you know, got my two golds, got my blue belt. And he had stopped coming to help coach at competitions. So I was going to competitions by myself, maybe with a couple other teammates. And it just, again, the culture kind of, either the culture changed or my eyes got opened to what was actually happening. So then I got my blue belt and he didn't go with me to any of my blue belt competitions. So I went to my first IBJJF at blue belt by myself. Oh, and the other thing is, he didn't really believe in master's divisions. He told us master's divisions are for lazy people and women who have had children. And I'm like, I'm not any of those things. So I'm like, I'm not signing up for masters. I mean, keep in mind, this was you know, I started in 2017. So I was already in my mid to late 30s. I'm like, I'm going against 19-year-old high school wrestling champions from Florida. So I'm like, I don't care. I can hang with these girls. Let's do this. I didn't do any master's divisions till I got to Texas. And one of my coaches was like, why are you doing adults? You're in your late 30s. Why would you do this? I was like, well, because I've always done it. And I won gold before we left Texas at IBJJF at Blue Belt after I'd switched schools. So I was like, I can hang with these girls. And they're like, yeah, you can, but why? Like, you want to do this forever. Why would you do that? And I was like, well, because this is what I was told, and I'm not lazy, and I don't have kids. So why? I don't get it. And then I went and did a master's division, and I was like, oh, it's actually really hard still. These girls, these women are no joke. They're still going to whoop you. And, like, it doesn't matter. And actually, you know, look, things just – the biggest thing is things just don't heal like they do when you're 20. I can go out and I can go hard and I can hang. But the thing is, like, all of us 42-year-old women have a basic understanding that, you know, no, I don't work full time, but I still have things that I need to do as an adult when Monday rolls around. I don't live with my parents. I don't not have responsibilities. I have 3 dogs that need to be taken care of while my husband's at work. Like, I'm the one that mows the lawn. I'm the one that does whatever. I have to be able to do those things. So we all just kind, not that we're not all trying to win, but there's this kind of more of an understanding and underlying respect that we all have things to do on Monday and we all kind of need to do those things. So it is a little different. There's not this reckless abandon. I'm invincible. I can cartwheel to the moon and back and it doesn't matter what happens to my body type of feeling. But yeah, I mean, once I started winning at Blue Belt, I mean, yeah, I had a bad experience at that school. I've gone through a lot of schools since I've been to Texas. Got held at Blue Belt probably longer than I should have because I was at a school where, oh, Gracie Baja, they have an attendance card.
That's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is just because, you know, on the show, I try and stay away from controversy and whatnot. But so you were on another show, the Legends and Dragons podcast with two of my previous guests and one of my future guests. But on that podcast, yeah, you the guys were trying to stay away from you mentioning any specific schools or teachers, but you had no shame in that.
And I don't have any shame.
I was like, I kind of love that. You know, we always try and stay away from you know, getting into trouble, but it's like, it's correct. You know, we'll get into that. But
look, I'm not gonna throw drama out there. I'm not throwing shade. But look, like, this is what they do. They take attendance. They promote only on attendance, and they hold people. And it's not bad. That's just the way that they do things. And you have to go in there knowing, hey, this is what this school does. And if you can't handle that, if you're like me and you're like, look, I know that I'm going to get another stripe in 30 days or whatever it is, but I am literally killing girls in competition in less than a minute, that has to count for something. It just has to.
Exactly.
You can't just ignore that. You can't ignore the fact that I had actually already been a blue belt for over a year before I ever got to them. So it's like, you just can't. You can't ignore. And so it just wasn't a place for me. And it may be different now. It's under new ownership. But a lot of the Gracies do it. A lot of the Gracie Bajas do it that way. You know, you just gotta know, you gotta know what you're getting into. And that wasn't presented to me when I started. It was just, oh, you want to compete? Great. That sounds wonderful. I'm so excited to help you. And then he never came and coached me. So there was a lot of empty promises, you know, from a person that's not very well respected in this community, I came to find out.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate that, you know, not just in jiu-jitsu, your experience is definitely in the Kenpo world, in the Capoeira world, in every martial art has these kind of stories with teachers that are chasing titles, chasing ranks, and chasing belt stripes and all this other nonsense. And it's just staggering that it's mind blowing to me how much that is in all of the different arts and different schools. And no matter where you go, there's always going to be those teachers. And it's like, why are you doing this? You know, it just makes no sense to me, but, they get put in their place, hopefully, you know, get the spotlight shown on them, and they get outed for the non great people that they are. So, I wanted to roll back real quick. So, when you started at that first kind of boxing school, was there any before that? Was there any sort of interest in martial arts or anything before that, or was the competing part of it the driving factor for you?
It really was the competing part of it. I wanted something that I could compete in and really be good at. I had done traditional sports. Team sports isn't my thing. So it just, again, it was just kind of like it was started off as just like a trial and error, like, hey, I need something to do. I need something physical and want to be able to compete. What are the options? It really wasn't. I mean, I've been familiar with like the UFC and MMA. So it seemed like, am I really thrilled about, you know, when it's just all stand up? No, not really. But I feel like I'm one of those people, take this however you want it, I have that aggression that's needed to do those things. Not that I'm an aggressive person, but, you know, it's, I think a lot of women, and what I've realized throughout the years, and especially when I was teaching at that boxing gym, is we as women are not, we're not given an outlet for aggression. It's like, people just assume we don't have it. And then if we do have that aggression, then we're just bitchy or we're overbearing or we're whatever. It's like, well, maybe you just need a way to get that out. And what I loved about teaching is that moment that a woman would come in, especially women 30 and over, because when I was, you know, teaching there, women who are 30 and over grew up like I did, where like combat sports were never an option for us. It just wasn't. So to watch them hit something for the first time and have them just go, oh my God, that I never, oh my God. And they can't even get the words out because there's just this release that happens when you can just physically get out whatever you need to get out, that you can't do that in anything but a striking sport or jiu-jitsu or something else, because it's just not like you're gonna go play soccer and like just run people over, like that's not, you're gonna get in trouble, like, you know. So I mean, unless you're gonna go play rugby, which I don't see a lot of women's rugby around either. So no. It was just something that there's just, it's not just some of us. There's a lot of us that need that outlet for aggression, for feelings, for whatever it is, to just have a release of some kind. And I'm definitely one of those people where, like, if I don't get to go to jiu-jitsu, I am not a nice person. Like, I need, it's my safe space. It's my mental health space. My husband, that's the gym for him. You know, he used to do bodybuilding and he still goes in and works out super hard. Why? Because that's his mental health release. When he has a long day, I'm like, hey, you still got to try and go because you need it. You need that release after a stressful day. It's fine that you come home and you vent to me, but it's not the same. And that's how I feel about jiu-jitsu. I don't get that from the gym. I don't get that from just lifting weights. I need, like, physical contact. I need a fight. And it doesn't mean that I'm going into jiu-jitsu and killing people. By no means is that what's happening. But it's that, it's just the release and the fun. And you have to put all of your mind and your energy into what you're doing. You're going to get hurt. So it's just a nice release. It takes your mind off everything. And that's just something that I just found. I mean, even more than the competing part, like, there's so much more benefit to it now that I'm in it, that, I mean, people just don't realize the benefit that it has for everything.
Yeah, having that outlet is huge. I know, like, Professor Philip talks about just having that. It goes for both men and women, but he always mentions, for men, that we have to, we're dealing with whatever things that we're dealing with, and if there isn't a place to get those things out, then it builds up and it destroys you from the inside out, and not just physically, mentally, emotionally. Mm-hmm. We all have to have those outlets for things like that. And there definitely needs to be a change of that mindset about, oh, well, this is a guy thing, this is a girl thing, this is, I can't do this because I came from this thing. It's like, no, these arts and these experiences are open to everybody, and should be able to do those things if mm-hmm. you so desire. So,
and look, it is not easy as a woman to be in this sport. It's not. I love it, and that's what helps me keep going. It's like one thing that I'm actually able to excel at. Like, there's no ceiling for me. Like, my shoulder's not an issue. It is, but it's not. Like, most people don't even know that there is an issue. If you would ask the people that I compete against, they would be like, there's no way she's got an issue. But it's just something that it's really hard to be, especially like an upper belt female, because then the guys come in and they kind of forget that I'm a woman and a 42-year-old woman. And I know Professor Greg will be like, Carly, you don't feel like a 42-year-old woman. I'm like, I know, because I put in a lot of work at the gym and a lot of work in here. But it's not about feeling like I'm a 42-year-old woman. It's about you understanding that you're still a man and you can still hurt me. Just because you have more physical strength than I do. So if you just hold me a certain way and you're not aware of just the fact that our bone structures are different, I have smaller bones than you. It's easier for you to hurt me than for me to hurt you. Honestly, like, just think about the first time you learned how to do a straight ankle lock. Did it hurt your forearm? Were you like, oh, I don't think I'm doing this right? Because it does. Sometimes it hurts your forearm if you're doing it right, because you have, the sharp part of your forearm against the sharp part of their back of their leg. For me, if I'm only drilling with men, I've got your big leg against my tiny forearm, and it hurts. I'm not going to lie about that. I'm not going to sit here and try and be a badass and be like, oh, no, I can take it. I'm a brown belt. Who cares? It hurts. I don't want to do it. If you give me a girl and she'll tap, but I can't tap most of you guys out on a straight ankle lock unless I have it perfect, unless it is perfectly in. And even then, if you want to fight it, I'm probably just going to let it go because honestly, I might break my forearm before I break your foot. Like it makes a difference. And it's just, that's where things, I think, really get lost is because guys just get confused by the color of the belt and the medals. And it's just like, yes, I compete. Yes, I have no problem fighting you, but you have to understand just the physical differences between us. And I can have a good role with anybody. Some of my best roles in class have been with upper belt men who outweigh me by like 75 pounds. But they understand how to roll with me, and to a point where they're like, okay, Carly's smaller and she can move more. She's way different than all of my other opponents that I usually fight, who we just lock in like two bulls locking horns, and we just move around till one of us falls to the ground, and then whoever's on top wins the match. She can do all of these other things, so let me let her move so I can learn from someone that is different than the person I usually roll with. Because there's so many, if you just do your game of a big person, you're never learning anything else. And there's this whole big other part of jiu-jitsu that you're missing out on. When I see a big guy do a barambolo or just even just any type of like forward roll, I'm like, yes, let's do that. Because you're rolling with me, that's the time to try that. Because you're not going to lose as much if you do that with me. I'm not going to, even if I put all my weight down on you while you're upside down, it's not going to hurt you. You're so huge. Like my weight doesn't matter. So that's your time to try it. If you want to sit there and hold me down and that's going to be our role, I mean, you could do that, but that's not a good role for me and it's not a good role for you. And no learning happened during that time. So are you trying to win practice as a white belt who doesn't know anything and you just want to be like, oh, I held Carly down, she couldn't do anything? Good for you. You outwing me by how much, and you've got a little bit of skill behind you at this point and you know how to hold me down. Great. But you didn't actually do anything. You didn't learn anything. If you actually tried to learn something, I don't know if I would have beat you, but it at least would have been a learning process for you.
Yeah, it's about the growth and not the highlight reel. feeling a little still a little sore from so a few weeks back I got my butt handed to me by one of our cohorts who granted I've only been at this about 6-7 months now, and funny enough, the pre-roll that I had before I got my stripe, I got manhandled by a new guy, and which granted he was probably more than half my age. He gave it to me pretty good, and I'm not gonna lie, I'm still a little butthurt about it. Professor Phillip gave him a good talking to, but kind of as we mentioned earlier, it's like, we got to go to work the next day. we got stuff to do. You can't be just running around all over people, but.
Well, and that's the other thing, yeah. Right? Is like Coach Phillip gave him a talking to, like, hey, look, I always say this, don't break your toys. If you break your toys, you have nothing to play with. If you hurt your training partners, you have nobody to train with. Nobody wants to train with you. You might get kicked out of the school. Like,
yeah.
It just
there's a way to be nice. I mean, for back to your point of like, oh, he was probably half your age, you know, as a female at a lot of the schools that I've been to, regardless of what I need out of training, I often get regulated to training with the women or training with the teenagers. And it's like, okay, I get it. And I'm totally fine paying it forward because someone did that for me at one point. I'm sure there were plenty of people that didn't want to train with me as a white belt. I get it. You either needed different training or you didn't want to deal with people that don't know what they're doing. I understand. But the 14-year-old boy who, when I started, was at my shoulder height and I outweighed them by 50 pounds and all of a sudden they had a growth spurt and now they look like a grown man at 15. That's not a good role for me. And why is it on me as the woman to sit those young men down and say, hey, look, you can run circles around me if you want to. You're 15. You already have way more testosterone than I'll have in my entire life. Again, like, I know I'm a brown belt, but like, there's only about less than two of those people that have actually listened because they're 15-year-old boys. They don't want to listen to me. They want to be with the men, right? Like, they want to show that it's only people that have had like really great parents that have also talked to them and said, hey, Carly's a great resource. Listen to her. And it's just, it's nice to be at a school with Professor Greg and Professor Phillip who understand that that's part of their responsibility as the coaches to have the back of the people that are at their school, whether it's the women, whether it's the guys. It's just really important if somebody comes in. I mean, we had a kid come in today. He was just visiting, but he clearly was, I mean, early 20s, maybe, blue belt. He gave Greg a decently hard time. Greg was not having him go with me. Like, I didn't even ask. I didn't want anything to do with that blue belt. He was a perfectly nice kid. I just didn't want anything to do with him. He looked like he was there to like really roll. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, I've got plenty of other people here to roll with. I don't need to go with him. And especially if Professor Greg thought that was going to be a good role for me, I would have been that kid's first role. Plain simple. But he clearly didn't. So it's really nice to be at a school where that's important because I left my last school because that wasn't the case. It was, you're an upper belt. It's important that you control the role. How am I supposed to control a role with a grown man who doesn't understand how to treat me? How am I supposed to control that role? How am I supposed to do that? I don't understand. And I definitely just don't want to be that stereotypical upper belt that's like, I will coach people through submissions with the utmost good intentions. And I don't do it a lot. I only really do it with people that I know really want it. I definitely don't want to be that person that's like, oh, well, every time I get Carly in an armbar, instead of just tapping, she coaches me through it. And oh, I'm over it because she just doesn't want to get tapped and the ego. That's not who I want to be. That's not who I am. So if I'm not doing that, though, I can't control the role because I can't physically control the role. Like I can't. It's not physiologically possible for me to outpower a grown man. It's just not. It's not the same. Oh, well, that person ripped a submission on you. Well, just get him back. How am I supposed to do that? What? Guys, I'm not Wonder Woman. I don't have some special superhuman powers. But what you see is 150-pound, 42-year-old woman. I can only do so much. Like, if I need someone to, quote, get back at somebody for hurting me, I need to go to my mat enforcer and be like, hey, go smash this guy and then kick him out. But I can't do it myself.
Exactly. So kind of going back to the competition side of it, and I guess we'll also kind of throw on this other piece here, but in the competing side, kind of what is the end goal, end game, at least as of right now? I know things change, and
there is no end goal. I'm going to compete forever. There's no end goal. There is just go do the best I can. Yes, of course I want to win, but is there anywhere in our house where there's medals up on a wall? No. That honestly, they're in a Tupperware container upstairs. There's nothing special. Maybe when this house we're not going to stay in, we haven't really decorated. Maybe if we have like a more permanent residence and we have a room that accommodates something like that, maybe put up my medals from World Masters, my PANS medals, like the big tournaments, the majors, maybe my Naga belt, because that's just kind of fun and cool. But it's not about the medals for me. It's again back to I've been really the only woman in the gym most of my time. So the only time that I get to go see where I'm at compared to everybody else and really understand where my level is if I go compete. Because there's nobody who at the gym am I going to compare myself to, even at Henzo's. All the girls are, we've got Jaden's a purple belt. Okay, but she doesn't really compete. Ariane's a purple belt, but she's a 6 a.m.er. I don't see her very much. Then we have a few blue belts and some white belts. They're all great training partners for me. But to really see how good I am, how dominant I am, is it time for me to level up? Is to go compete. That's really the only way. Because really, truly, depending on if I'm training, let's think of our brown belts. We've got Justin, who's been doing it his whole life. I mean, his jiu-jitsu is beautiful. I've never been tied up so gently in my entire life. he's a great role. He probably thought I was a weirdo when I rolled with him the other day because I had this big shit grin on my face. I'm like, you're just ridiculous. Like, I'm in awe. It's not like he was wiping the floor with me or anything, but it's so effortless. So you got Justin, who's probably, in his 20s? So he might be 15 to 20 years younger than me. You've got Webb, Darren, and John, who are all huge guys. I mean, they're not gigantic, but they're way stronger than me. So it's like, I don't really have anybody on an equal playing field to compare myself to. So that's kind of what competition is for me. And God, I just love it. I don't want to. The worst part about my brown belt's been the worst belt. I hate my brown belt. I'm going to be totally honest about that. I know you're supposed to like the process, but at all my other belts, I've competed once, at least once, sometimes twice, sometimes three times a month, I would go compete. If there was a competition, I was going. I don't have anybody to compete against anymore. I'm going to Austin this weekend. It's me and two other girls in the weight class. I'm going up a weight class. And then at Masters 3 brown belt, we're the only three. So I'll fight them in our division. And then hopefully they sign up for the open so we get some more fights. Because we'll all medal so we can all sign up for the open. And Dallas is in August, and there's no one. There's no one in Dallas. So it's like, now I'm going to have to wait all the way to Masters Worlds at the end of August to have anybody else. The fact that there was somebody signed up at a World League for me last month and that Professor Greg could actually get me in at the last minute was awesome. I don't care if it's World League. I'll go to World League. I'll go to Naga. I'll go to New Breed. I'll go to anything. And I've always been that way. People can say whatever they want about IBJJF. They can say whatever they want about, I mean, you hear people talk trash about Naga. Dude, again, know what you're signing up for. Honestly, I did a super fight. I would probably never do a super fight in Nogi again. Not a submission only, because I don't respect the game that you have to play to do that. The whole, like, you can just sit down and roll around and wait for somebody to come into your guard so you can grab a leg. I don't see any honor in that. Stand up, give these people a fight. Like, they pay good money to be here, to watch and support you. Give them a good fight. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. If I did it again, I would probably just stick to Gi because I think it would be more in my favor. But it's just, I'll do anything. I just want to compete. So brown belt, I went from fighting, like I said, 1, 2, 3 times a month to 3 times a year. Just because there's nobody to fight, even at PANS. PANS. It's a huge tournament. I had one girl in my division. It was me and one other girl. I had one fight. I went all the way to Florida for one fight. And I mean, I got to fight in the open, but still, it's just like, oh, you're just spending all this money and all this time. It's hard on my husband when I go out of town because he works a ton. He owns his own business. So to leave him with taking care of the dogs and everything at the house for, I know it's just a weekend, but it's a lot for him. And it's a sacrifice he's willing to make for me to be able to do this. But is the sacrifice worth one fight and all the money to fly to Florida, get a hotel or an Airbnb and a car? It's just, it's a lot. And it's just, brown belt's just been hard.
Yeah, I can understand that. I know my wife, you know, I know she loves me and supports me, and she's the best. But I'm always a little nervous when it's like, okay, well, I was nervous telling her that I signed up to compete in September, which I was surprised that she was like, oh, this is, you know, great. I know every time I come to her and it's like, okay, well, I'm going to start another martial art or I'm going to go to this tournament. It's like, sometimes I think she's going to run for the door, but she's been very supportive. But, yeah, with all these different arts and, you know, going to different places, I've got a, going to be going to Arizona in October for a Capoeira event. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, I got to get a plane ticket. And it's just like,
I know it's a lot.
Support you. But man, like we never actually went on our honeymoon. And to, here I am going to this tournament or this event or, you know, so.
Yeah,
I can understand that. So now that you're at the brown belt, or I should say, looking at the not so much the competing side, but you know, your next step is the coveted black belt, and kind of where do you see the future of that going? Any aspirations for opening your own academy or that sort of thing? Or
no. No, I like training too much. And here's the thing. People think like, oh, yeah, you're going to open up your own academy. It'll be great. How often does Professor Greg train? And that's fine if he wants to teach. And that's his passion, obviously. And I really like to teach too. I would love to teach for Enzo's one class, maybe. Like, I don't I don't want a full schedule of teaching a class because I want to train. And I made that very clear. I don't mind helping teaching. I don't mind subbing a class. I would prefer it be adult class, but I don't mind teaching the kids class if everybody has to go. God forbid the school gets like just this horrible virus, right? That everybody gets sick. And it just, you know how it is. We're all in such close contact. One person gets sick, then the next person gets sick. We all have good intentions of not spreading it, but you don't know you're sick till it's too late most of the time. So, you know, God forbid, none of the kids' coaches could come and they needed me to teach. I would teach. It's fine. But I obviously would prefer to teach adults. Like, I'd love to teach a women's class. I'd love to teach a comp class.
That's what I was about to say. Was maybe we need like a competition focused specific class. And
I would love to teach a comp class, because I think the guys could learn plenty from me. It's not because I don't teach people just my game. My game works for me, and for very specific reasons, and I've developed that game for me. Based on my opponents over 8.5 years. That's not going to work for you. We're not the same body type. We're not the same. You're not fighting the same people. So I like to watch everybody. And I think the way that Greg does it is great because most of you guys haven't competed that much. So the fact that he breaks it down real simple in pull guard or wait for them to pull guard, whoever gets to mount first, mount back, whichever, that's your goal. Perfect. Because that's all you guys really need to worry about. You don't need to, I don't even really think about my game anymore. But as you guys get better and as you guys develop a more of your own personal style, that game plan is going to change. It's not going to just be that simple. And I want to be able to take that. I want to be able to go watch you compete and say, look at your tape and say, hey, this is where you excelled. Let's hone in on that. Like, you don't look really confident on your feet. Let's figure out what the best takedown is going to be for you. Is it going to be pulling guard? How do you want to pull guard? There's like 17 different ways that I pull guard depending on what the person's doing. So I like to kind of find everybody's strengths and point you in that direction. I don't just teach pull guard, go to a triangle, submit the person. Like, that works for me. It's not probably going to work for you. And that's okay. At private lessons, I'm down for private lessons. I've done those before. I really enjoy that. Again, it gives me a chance to really like hone in on what a specific person needs. I like to nerd out a little in the details with people. So, you know, it's because it's a lot of things that as white belts and blue belts, you don't really know that certain things are there yet. When you watch a video on Instagram, it's not that I don't want you to watch a video on Instagram. I want you to wait till you can see what you're actually seeing.
Yeah.
And there's some times that I look at a video on Instagram and I'm like, let me watch that for a seventh time and see if I can figure it out. Because it's hard, right? There's so many different angles. And if they don't show you from every angle, you don't really know what's going on. And you don't know if the person that they're demonstrating on is just going to fall over regardless of what happens because they want it to look nice. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, there's a lot of things that are going on. But running my own school, no, I've talked about maybe like, I think what's really missing in the sport, especially for women, upper belt women, are the opportunity to have like good training partners. I'm not a huge fan of open mats. I know that there's a lot of different open mats in town where they're like, yay, women, DFW Women Grappling Club. Look, women are not like guys. Women are not nice to other women. It's that's not a thing. like all the white belts and blue belts, like y'all might be like super tight. And if you really watch a lot of these videos on Facebook of like all these like different grappling, like they all get together once a month or whatever, it's a lot of lower belts. There's not a lot of upper belts there unless they're leading the class. Because look, if a brown or black belt woman came into Henzo's tomorrow, I'm going to be like, oh, what is she going to be like? I'm not going to be like, yes, because I'm the type of person where, so Shannon O'Shea, she's a black belt in town. Love her to death. She is the type of girl I want to train with. Her and I train hard, but we laugh and we have a good time. And it's not, we're not competing against each other, but like we can go hard. We can pojada. And it is like we are laughing at the end. Our hair is a mess, but nobody got hurt. And I felt like I had like a low-key competition role, but it was all in good-natured fun. That is so rare. So rare. I can't even explain to you how rare that is. Usually it's the girl comes in, she sizes you up. There's this, you're trying to be the best girl in the room at an upper belt. That's not, let's just train. You hardly ever get to train with other upper belt women. So like, let's just be collaborative. Let's not fight against each other. I went to, when I was with a Lovato gym, I went to his camp. They have like a annual big organization camp every October, November, whatever it is. And there was this other brown belt girl there. She was super cool. We drilled. It was great. She was great. As soon as it was time to roll, have you competed in jiu-jitsu yet, Reggie?
No.
Okay.
September will be my first.
What you will find out is that, and maybe you've seen this in class, you guys don't really stand up that much, but I can tell as soon as somebody grabs my gi, I know what kind of role it's going to be. As soon as this girl grabbed my lapel, I was like, oh, we're rolling like that. Like, you're rolling with me to see who's better. We're not rolling a roll. You want to beat me. Like we're at Worlds. And again, she was super nice. I was like, all right, if you want to do this, I'm going to match you. I don't think she was very happy with the results. But I mean, that was at a Lovato camp where like we all were supposed to be working together. We're all on the same team. And it's just, I would love to have a place where like, if I wanted to say, train with a friend of mine, I could just almost like an LA Fitness, but for jiu-jitsu, right? Like have just like you pay a membership, you can either like reserve mat time or you can like come and go as you please because the mat's big enough where multiple people can be on it. And I can call up a friend or a few friends and be like, hey, let's just all go and train this afternoon, like for an hour, and get some good rolls in, or let's just all go and drill this one move. I just think it's something that would be great for people who have like odd job hours where they can't always make, like 6 a.m. doesn't work, but neither does noon, but neither does 6 p.m. Their time off is at 10, you know, like, and then where do those people fit in? They don't, you know, someplace where, hey, if I wanted to do private lessons and like Greg wasn't okay with that, me doing them at Henzo's, hey, I can go to this big open gym and just reserve time and maybe pay them a fee or some, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be my dream. I don't want to buy myself a job.
Gotcha.
Like I worked a lot when my husband was in school and I still work for him. I still work for our company a little bit from home. But I don't want to work full time again. I don't want to buy myself like I don't want to be at the gym at 6 a.m. to open the gym to teach class. I don't want to be there till 8, 9 o'clock at night. That's what owning a jiu-jitsu gym is. The only way to make any kind of money at a jiu-jitsu gym at least for the first few years, is owner operated. And that's like the big myth, right? Like, oh, you're a black belt, you're going to open up a gym. No, no thanks. I'm not trying to buy myself a job. I want to still really enjoy my sport. I want to compete. I want to do all these things that I love. I don't want to be, if I was just teaching, if I owned a school, all I would do is teach. And I really like teaching, but I don't want to do it all the time. It's not the only thing I want to do. And I'm sure you'll have people that hear me say this and be like, well, I own a gym and I still compete and I still do really well. Great. Great. I don't want to do that. I really love drilling. I love drilling. I love specific training. I love rolling. I like going to class. Maybe that makes me weird, but I like going to class. I like working with my teammates on stuff. I like learning new things, because how are you learning new things if you're always teaching? Like, things get lost.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people out there that agree with you. They just don't want to say it.
They don't want to say it.
They're listening and they're going,
just be honest. Yes. Everyone is going to be like, I'm going to get my black belt and open up a gym. Stop it. And then you realize how much you hate it because you're not training.
It's not as bland.
And then you realize how hard it is to run a business. It's not easy to get people to sign up at your gym. Look at how many gyms. And gyms are harder to run than restaurants.
They open and
close like crazy. No, thank you.
Gotcha. Yeah, I can relate. I can relate. Okay, so we're going to move into our lightning round here. Just got a few questions here as we head towards wrapping up here. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
I have a favorite position. And then anything from that, I love close guard. I love anything from close guard. That's my game. That's my home. Like, I don't, again, it's an underrated position. It's a very underrated position. It works on big people. It works on small people. I try to expand my game more, but anything from close guard is home.
Very nice. Very nice. So I guess kind of going along with that part of that. So a favorite submission.
Anything I can get? Anything you'll like give it. Me? I honestly don't really. I mean, I choke people a lot, but I don't know if it's my favorite. It's just, you know, whatever you're going to give me, I'll take it.
I gotcha. I like it. All right. If there's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be?
Oh, I'm so not a fangirl. Honestly, I just want to train anybody that's going to give me good training. And anybody that's going to teach me something new. Honestly, seminars are not my jam for that exact reason. It's just too many people fanboying and fangirling over somebody. Look, it's jujitsu. Like, if you're going to be a good training partner for me, come on, come train. Like, I'm not picky. I can't even think of somebody that I would be like, oh yeah, if I could train with this person. Cause that's not really me. Honestly, I got a little bit of flack for leaving my last school because they were like, don't you want to be promoted by a legend? I'm like, dude, no one knows who he is. No one knows who he is outside of this general area. Like, it's really not that big of a deal. Like, I'm just not that type of person.
Yeah. I think a lot of people forget that, you know, unless you're in that circle or that, you know, that community, like, people don't know. I mean, all the time I tell my wife, like, oh, I'm interviewing this person and they're well known in the Kenpo world, or they're an actor or stuntman or something like that. And, you know, her eyes just kind of glaze over and it's like, oh, like, good for you. It's like, she has no idea who this person is. I'm excited. I'm losing my mind. I'm like, I can't believe I'm talking to this person. So it's like, okay.
Do you know who Brock Lesnar is?
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar used to work out. So my husband's from Minnesota and we lived there for a few years after college before he went to med school. He worked out at our gym. It was a really small, like little hole in the wall, bodybuilder type gym in Plymouth, Minnesota. And my husband was like, oh my God, did you see who was in here? And I was like, oh yeah, I mean, yeah, Brock Lesnar was in here. And he was like, what? But isn't that like really cool? I'm like, yeah, it's cool. But I mean, he's in here working out. I'm not going to go say hi to him. I'm not going to interrupt his workout. He's just trying to like do his thing. Like, I'm just trying to do my thing. Like, how? But I'm a super awkward person in those situations anyway. I would feel awkward interrupting him. I wouldn't be like, I would be very uncomfortable. You should come to World Masters and see the people fan out with who they see at Jiu-Jitsu Con, because there's a whole convention that happens at World Masters. And my friends will be like, I took this picture with this person, my picture with this person, and that person, and that person. Who'd you get pictures with? I'm like, no, nobody. Like, oh, but don't, no. Like, what? So they can just sit on my camera reel and I can tell nobody about it? Like, because they're just here trying to look at a t-shirt. Like, let them be. Let them live their life.
Yeah, fortunately, I'm still learning who the jiu-jitsu celebrities are. I mean, when Kenny Kim was here, and I think I told a few people, like, oh, yeah, like this guy, you know, like, have you heard of Kenny Kim? And got, you know, some of my friends are like passing out, like, oh my God. And I guess he's important because everybody's making a big deal that he's coming. So I was like, I don't really know who he is, but you know, okay, you know, so. I'm sure I'll get to that point once I start learning who these people are, but that's, you know, that's how it goes. All right. So the last question there, what is something that always inspires you to train? So I will frame this. I will use the example of the movie Rocky IV when he's doing his training, he's chopping the wood, he's running through the snow, he's, you know, lifting the rocks, the music's playing, and anytime I watch that, I just get pumped up and ready to hit the mats and go to the gym and that sort of thing. So what is something that always inspires you to train?
You know, I like I said in the group text, like, get ready, stay ready, right? Like, I don't need to listen to certain music on the way to the gym. I definitely don't want to listen to anything like slow. I'm not trying to like go to sleep, but anything with like a decent beat on the way to the gym, cool. But I just love it so much that I don't need to get like pumped up to go. Even at like competition, when I'm in the bullpen, I have headphones with me. I probably don't have them on. I can turn it on when I need to turn it on. And I don't need to be like, I love jiu-jitsu so much. Like, that's the best part of my day. The best part of my day is when I get to go train jiu-jitsu or when I get to go compete. So I don't need to be pumped up to go do it. The thing that gets me inspired is going to do it and getting to do it and having that opportunity. I think I'm lucky to be able to do that. So being able to go in there and know that, hey, next month there might be someplace I can go compete, so I better be ready. I better eat right. I better get to the gym. I better get to training because I always want to be ready no matter what. Hey, I might get offered a super fight next weekend. I better be ready. And that's what keeps me going. It's the routine. It's the... like, I'm just going to go out there and be my best every single time.
Very nice. I like it. All right. So our final thing here is shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything you'd like, or if there's anything that we hadn't covered that you wanted to make sure we get out today, you have the floor, and we'll go from there.
Well, I don't think I have anything to shamelessly plug yet. So, I mean, I guess...
hopefully I'll start doing some privates soon. That's something that obviously I'll have to work out with the school. So I guess keep an eye. I'm going to try and do a little bit more self-promoting on social media. So I'm trying to get better at that. I'm putting myself out there a little bit more. I would love to have some sponsors. War Tribe, if you'd like to sponsor me. I've been wearing your geese for years. They're my favorite, and I wear nothing else. So,
very nice.
But I mean, other than that, I'm just, you know, just competing, doing my thing.
Right on. I like it. I like it. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to be on and sharing your stories. I mean, the time is has flown by, which I love. And I mean, I say this, I think with every guest, I mean, there's so much we could get into, and so we'll definitely have to do a part two and
of
three
course.
And four, five and all of that good stuff. But yeah, I just thank you again for being on and sharing the story, and can't wait to get this out for everyone to hear. And yeah, just thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.